Okay, so let's all do a big clap. Actually, wait, no, one person do it. Do a bigger one. Amazing. Okay.
Machiavelli was a diplomat. Machiavelli's politics granddad. Machiavelli from Italy came. With Machiavelli, things were never lame. Machiavelli, we made you a show. It's the Machiavelli Podcast, so let's go.
Welcome back to the Machiavelli Podcast. My name is Donal. I'm the Political Activities Coordinator on the 58 Board. Today we are joined by three wonderful guests, Yael, Kim and Julius, and they're going to tell us all about the German electoral system, the German elections, which are on Sunday, and the effects of the elections, and many, many more. Firstly, though, Kim is going to run through how the electoral system works, and then we're going to have a little chat about it.
Thank you so much. Yeah, my name is Kim. I'm currently studying political science at the UVA. You ask about the German electoral system. And in fact, it's a quite complicated system, I would say, because the Germans actually cast two votes. 50% of the representatives are directly elected from 299 districts, and 50% are elected based on the party vote share, right? So because of the system, Germany actually has the second biggest parliament in the world. And reason for that is that each directly elected representative from the district gets a seat in the parliament, which is guaranteed. So as an example, maybe to like wrap your head around it, if all 299 districts vote for a Christian Democratic representative, then the CDU, the Christian Democratic Party, gets 299 seats in the parliament. The issue with this is that the second vote is the vote that actually determines the percentage how many seats each party gets. So the second vote is actually the decisive factor that determines how many seats each party gets. So if the CDU, let's say, gets 20% of the second votes, they get 20% of the total seats in the parliament, and the 299 seats they got from the directly elected representatives therefore have to make up 20% of the total seats in the parliament. So then the rest of the seats are then distributed according to the percentage of each party's second voting outcome. So let's say the Social Democrats got 25% of the votes, which would be 5% more than the 299 seats the CDU already has. They would get 5% more seats than the 299 seats, right? So therefore, even if there should only be 498 seats for the delegates in the parliament, new seats have to be implemented almost every election to compensate for additional delegates, so that the percentage of votes for each party is according to the seats in the parliament. So it's really complicated, but in short, there's 598 seats for delegates. However, there's 111 compensation mandates. So that would make this year for the last election, there were 709 seats in total, making it the largest Bundestag or the largest German parliament to date.
I mean, officially, they're supposed to change it, like our Supreme Court decided that they have to change it, but especially the biggest parties are profiting of it, like the SPD and the CDU, CSU, because the first vote is determined by the relative majority. They usually profit of it, and of course, because of that, they don't really see a need to change it. But the expenses for the system itself are so high that it's literally needed to do that.
Yeah, but the system definitely has benefits as well, mm-hmm. because it combines this very personalized political system of a first-past-the-poll system like in the UK or the US with the accuracy of a proportional-based vote system. And so that actually makes the German voting system an anchor of stability in the country, but also in Europe and the EU, of course. And so you really have to balance out this pejorativeness of the complexity of the vote, but also the benefits of having that personalized and accurate voting system.
Mm-hmm. And is there a general appetite to change it, or are people generally happy with how it is?
Well, especially smaller parties, like the small liberal party in Germany, they, for example, want to prevent an even bigger parliament by decreasing the number of districts in Germany. So what they want to do is they want to decrease the 299 districts to 250 districts, but if that's ever going to be implemented, I mean, that's just speculation. Mm.
And there's quite a lot of arguments about why should 83 million Germans be represented by more parliamentarians than 1.3 billion Indians, for example.
Yeah.
It doesn't make sense. Our parliament's bigger than that of India, bigger than the US one, bigger than the UK one, bigger than the French parliament. it isn't quite proportional to our country's size.
I agree with that. Yeah. And it also just makes it more expensive, right? The taxpayer in the end pays for it because the delegates get paid for, like, by the taxpayers.
Quite handsome,
right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, and it also makes the work harder, I guess, for the delegates themselves.
Does anyone know, is it comparable to any other systems in the world?
No, it's a rather unique system.
Wow.
I think it's actually got the ideas based after the Second World War, of course.
Yeah.
For getting a better representation of the people, and because of that, it's also better to counterbalance the system, because extreme parties are not getting as much power as in a normal, like for example, in a system of majority vote.
Yeah, it's not something that I was ever fully aware of or like could ever fully grasp. Now I'm maybe slightly more in that way. I'm sure anybody listening who maybe doesn't know a whole lot about it is still quite confused. But let's move a little bit on to more about the elections, which will take place on Sunday. 16 years, I believe, Angela Merkel was Chancellor of Germany, and now she's retiring. Is she resigning? Retiring. She's retiring.
She is.
Yeah. So she's going to live on a beach somewhere and have fun. yeah. So tell me, who should I know about?
Well, one of the new things about this election is it's the first time in German history that a chancellor doesn't stand for re-election. And so that quite changes the playing field of these elections in 2021. And right now there are three main contenders for the chancellorship. That's Olaf Scholz from the Conservatives Coalition Party, the SPD, the Social Democratic Party. Mm-hmm. There's Armin Laschet, the current Minister President of North Rhine-Westphalia for the Conservatives. And there's Annalena Baerbock for the Green Party. And so these are kind of the main players right now. And looking at the polls in this moment, Olaf Scholz and Armin Laschet are the front runners.
Right, which is pretty crazy to me because Angela Merkel's party, the CDU, was certain to be a big partner in the new government until a few months back, because we've seen an extraordinary collapse actually in support for the center-right Christian Democrats and their Bavarian sister party, the CSU, and as well as an incredible rise of the Social Democrats of Olaf Scholz, right? And we had a poll yesterday by the INSA Institute that put the Social Democrats 3 percentage points ahead of the CDU with 27%. And I think no one could have predicted this. Like, if someone told me 3 months ago that the Social Democrats would overtake the Christian Democrats, I would have not believed them. And it's very extraordinary.
Why do you think that is, though?
I think it's because this year's election is especially about, like, how a future is going to get designed. Like, Angela Merkel was chancellor for 16 years. Like, I mean, at least I can only speak from my experience, but I really can't remember like any other chancellor. For me, she's such an important and relevant figure in the German system and also like in the international system. And it's really about how we're going to decide a future. In addition to that, we also have the issue that most people are not really happy with all the candidates that are going to get elected. And because of that, there's a lot of change in the system. People are really unsure who we're going to vote for. We had quite some scandals. For example, one was connected to the floods in Germany in July. Then we had another case of plagiarism by publishing a book. So quite a lot of
going on. Yeah,
it's very non-political.
It's very
topics
volatile, I would say. It's very volatile. We've seen so many changes within the past months, right? Yeah. And I think you ask about why is it now that the Social Democrats have taken over? And I believe this is just speculation, right? Like no one knows what exactly affects the polls. But I think it's specifically about the candidate. So for the Social Democrats, it's Olaf Scholz, right? And I think he's really made a name for himself within the past months as the vice chancellor of Germany right now and also as the finance minister. I think he just plays a really competent role. And he's also presenting himself kind of as the continuity candidate of Merkel. So people really see in him like the safe, stable man that will just continue Germany's era, which we've seen in the past 16 years is pretty good. We've seen great growth in Germany, and he just represents that, I would say. So it's probably most likely also about the candidate.
So you feel maybe that the CDU dropped the ball because they could have grasped that support, but
I think what was generally underestimated was just the importance of the figurehead of the party or the candidates themselves, because under Merkel, the CDU was at an all-time high. They were polling on average every time above 30%, up to 40% at some points. But as soon as people really realized that she is now stepping down as chancellor, she is not the candidate for these upcoming elections, so over summer, over August, let's say, and they realized that the alternative is either Laschet or Scholz, as you said, this emblematic man for continuity, stability, but also fiscal responsibility with a slight social touch, right? They really realized these elections are not only about the composition of our parliament, but also about who is going to govern Germany. And when it came down to that question, most people put their trust in Olaf Scholz. Mm.
Which is kind of ironic, because Laschet is the party of Angela Merkel, right? He should be the continuity candidate, but as of right now, he's not. And Laschet really has lost one quarter of his like supporters within the past month, which is which is a lot. Like he's in serious trouble right now, I'd say.
Yeah, I think it's just good to know that what we can definitely see is that Angela Merkel never really put a successor in place. It's just it was really unpredictable what is going to happen after. There was even like the speculation if she would actually continue for another 4 years, because there wasn't like really a plan for how to design a future in the CDU, honestly.
And she wanted to leave in 2017. Is that, am I right in saying that? Isn't that like there was a general suggestion that was when she was going to...
I would say that's more speculation.
Yeah. Speculation, okay.
And I think when looking at Merkel, of course, she comes across as this very nice, neighborly woman, right? Which she definitely also is, for sure. But staying in power for 16 years at the head of Europe's biggest economy takes an enormous political will. And what she did during those 16 years is eliminate any kind of rivaling figure within her party. So that could have been Friedrich Merz at some point, or Norbert Röttgen, who all now don't really play any role within the party, any important role. And so what the Conservatives were facing at the beginning of this election cycle, they really didn't have any popular figure that could take on the role of chancellor candidate. And so now they're stuck with Armin Laschet, who is one of the more familiar people in the party, but he isn't really someone that people would trust as chancellor.
I would agree with that heavily, because I even think he kind of has a credibility problem right now. And we've seen, like, in the polls earlier when they elected the new head of the party, we had a second candidate within the CDU and the CSU. His name was Markus Söder. And people actually would have preferred him as the chancellor over Armin Laschet. But the party internally decided not to do that. Instead, they chose Armin Laschet. And right now, as of right now, things can still change within the next 5-4 days. But as of right now, that looks like a wrong decision by the...
Do you think it's a wrong decision by the party? Like, well, okay, the party, yes. But could you view it as... of course, Angela Merkel is a politician and it's her job to be, you know, the number one. Yeah. Is it a failure on her part that there is no suitable candidate?
I don't think so. I think it also has a lot to do with the demographic change going on. I mean, there are more young people. Climate change is getting a more and more important topic. It's actually the most important topic, just based on polls, but it's actually not taking, it's actually not that relevant for the actual decision, I think. But I think it's just something that's rather normal, like it's a normal progress. It's nothing.
I disagree. I think it's definitely going to be a discussion within the Conservative Party, and it's definitely going to be a taint on her legacy within that party, because they, of course, expect once she's stepping down, it is not going to impact our decision making on this country. And if it really happens that the Conservative are out of government after Sunday's election, it's going to impact how people are going to remember her within the party.
It's funny that you like the most how did you put it? Sorry, the most relevant topic at the moment in Germany is climate change, but the Green Party.
Let's this talk about the other parties. We've just talked about the two main parties, right? Yeah. But we have how many other parties in the parliament? Five other parties. We have the CDU, the SPD, the AfD, the Left, the Free Democrats,
and the Greens.
Six. Six to seven, because we've like a
But on the Green Party, no. Yeah. So the leader is called
Annalena Baerbock,
and she is someone who lies on her CV.
She is.
Exactly.
Well, allegedly.
It became a huge thing because she was caught plagiarizing parts of her book. She's been caught putting wrong statements on her CV, and that's just has gotten a lot of media attention, obviously, especially as a chancellor candidate, I guess. That's not a good look for her. But her pollings have slipped a little bit. However, they're still stable, and according to the current polls, actually, it's very likely that the Greens will be part of a government this year. The question is how big the impact is going to be of them governing with a bigger party, right? Since they're most likely not going to be the biggest party after the election. They most likely will be part of a government.
But I think what we shouldn't forget is that even if the Greens become part of a government, mm-hmm. it's still going to be incredibly disappointing for them, because what was yes. kind of revolutionary about this election is that for the first time in their history, the Greens put forward a chancellor candidate in Annalena yes. Baerbock. So they had the will to lead this country, and they were polling at some point at 30% nice. And above, mm. and they've now fallen to 15, 16, 14%. So even though it's very likely that they're going to be in government, their will to lead this country and to become chancellor will probably not manifest.
I think this is something overall which makes this, as we already said, it's just because it's such a big change. There's a lot of dynamics in the polls and everything. But it's also, as you said, it's the first time that we actually had three possible candidates. It's really unpredictable how the future is going to look like, because we're a parliamentary democracy. We don't know how our next government is going to look like. There are a lot of potential coalitions. Most of them are including three parties, or all of them are actually including three parties, if we're going to be realistic. And we don't know who's going to be in the next chancellor at this point, because it really depends on this, like, debates, on the
negotiations, the coalition negotiations. Yeah.
What's going to work out?
Yeah, it's always kind of a dilemma after the elections, right? Like, who might be thinking about going into a coalition with which party? We always have this after the German election. It can take weeks, months. We've seen in 2017 there have been a lot of coalition negotiations that failed. We've seen the Free Democrats trying to go into a coalition with the Greens and the Christian Democrats, right? And that has failed. And this year it's going to get even more complicated, because we can be pretty certain of the fact that Germany will have its first three-way coalition, on a national level for decades. So three parties are going to have to come together and find a common ground to govern the country. It's going to be very interesting and very, very complicated. It's going to be a dilemma.
Like, to get three parties to, I mean, it happens all over the world, I know, but it's just never a concept that I fully understand. The fact that parties can, from all different parts of political perspective, can somehow come together and govern a country in a professional and effective way. Yeah. But it happens.
Definitely. And also because we only have quite few parties in the parliament, they're like really cover nearly the whole continuum of the left-right continuum. And because of that, there are a lot of extremes like facing each other. We should probably talk about possible coalitions at this point. I mean, do you know what our current coalition, and it's definitely not going to continue because most people and most Germans are really unhappy with it. It's the Grand Coalition. It's between the two biggest parties, the CDU, so the Conservatives, and the SPD. And they're definitely not going to continue. So our alternatives are like, we have like a red-red-green coalition. It's between the SPD, the Greens, and the Left Party, which is actually quite unlikely because the Left Party is rather extreme and doesn't really represent many Germans, and they have quite extreme opinions about the NATO and the EU and also about Russia. Then we have the, how's it called? Like, Ampel Coalition?
The Traffic Light, yeah.
Traffic Light Coalition, exactly. Coalition. So with the Social Democrats, the Greens, and
the Free Democrats.
But the Free Democrats are on the right side of the continuum, so how to get together with the SPD and the Greens, because it's also not their favorite coalition. Mm-hmm. And then we have like the coalitions with the Conservatives, which is like a black ampel.
It's like the
Jamaica coalition.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, with the Conservatives, the Greens, and Liberals, mm-hmm. but the Liberals and the Conservatives are quite close with the the goals.
However, this
but
has
the Greens
failed.
Are
this has failed
not
before,
really.
Right?
Yeah, like you want to talk about
yeah,
it?
Yeah, I guess. I mean, this Jamaica coalition we've talked about, right? Like, this was one of the issues in 2017 with the famous sentence by the head of the Free Democrats who said it is better not to govern than to govern wrong. And I think that just shows again how complicated it is. You said in a lot of countries around the world we have three parties governing, but like I said, in Germany this hasn't happened for decades. So it's going to be really difficult to actually find a common ground.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if that's a fact, by the way. I just mean that in general, the concept is something that's strange to me. But I mean, it's funny comparing to the Netherlands as well, where they have a much smaller country, of course, a very different electoral system, but a much smaller country, and the idea of having three coalition partners is pretty it's usually more, right?
No, it would be the first three-way coalition in Germany ever.
Yeah.
It is quite usual, or it's always the case, to have a two-party government, mm-hmm. but that tends to be easier because then the same partners on the same side of the ideological spectrum can govern together. So that's mostly the Christian Democrats and the Free Democrats and the Social Democrats and the Green Party.
Yeah.
But now with three partners in government, you would have to bridge enormous ideological differences. So, for example, a very likely government to happen is the traffic light coalition. So one of the biggest hobbies of German journalists in front of election is inventing funny names for coalition options. So
as you've seen,
traffic light is...
I've never heard Jamaica a coalition before in my life.
Yeah, it's red for the Social Democrats, green for the Greens, obviously, and yellow for the Free Democrats, as opposed to the Jamaica coalition. Mm. So based on the country's flag, it would be black for the Conservatives, green for the Greens, and yellow for the Liberals. But coming back to the traffic light coalition, so that would be two very left-leaning parties or center-left-leaning parties governing together with a center-right-leaning party. And so that, of course, creates complications, and that is why it's very likely that these upcoming negotiations are going to take quite a while, up to some months. Mm-hmm. So it's very likely that Merkel is actually going to stay on as chancellor until, for example, Christmas, because the current government is going to be in place until a new government is formed after the election.
Yeah. And just to pick up on the what you said, do you mean that the Greens are centre-left?
Well, the Greens are quite left-leaning, so they're quite radical or... progressive, however you want to put it, on climate change issues, of course. And they come from a very protest-based movement in the 80s. And they moved themselves ideologically to the center to attract new voters.
Yeah.
And that seemed to work. They seemed to be the new center-left party. But now with the current polls, the Social Democrats are not that, as everybody thought. And they stay on as the leading center-left party, especially with Olaf Scholz, who is of the conservative wing of the Social Democratic Party, and who is really trying to put forward this, just this framing that he is a chancellor for all Germans, a chancellor of the center of society, and a man who would stand for stability in the country.
Yeah. Now, the reason I ask, though, is that it's just my own personal view. Like, if a Green Party is centre-left, then I don't really see the point in them. Like, what's their purpose if they're... You know what I mean? Like, if the whole...
It's a good
if
debate.
The whole point of it, you know, like, what's the difference between them and the Social Democrats? If they're not radical.
I mean, they're definitely more... I think they're definitely more climate... focused on climate.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But we have the saying, at least in my state where I'm from, Baden-Württemberg, that we always say, because we're the only state with a green leader, we always say, the Greens are quite conservative for a Green Party. They're just like the CDU covered in a green coat because of that, because they're very conservative in a lot of narratives they have, but they're more progressive in that they better adapt to the issues of the 21st century, but of the recent years.
Like the flooding, for example, it was only a few months ago, wasn't it? Yeah.
July, yeah.
You would expect that on the back of that, there would be a general support behind the Greens.
Yeah.
But Moving on to another party that I really want to ask about, and I believe they're called the AORP.
AFD.
AFD.
Uh-huh.
I got one out of three. Yeah. That is an awful ratio. They are quite a dangerous radical right-wing party. Am I right in saying
well,
that?
Well, yeah, they're a far-right populist party, and they actually have shown in the past election that they should not be underestimated. They were the third strongest power after the last election. However, no party to this date would be ready to go into a coalition with them. Every party ruled that out, and therefore it is impossible for them to govern. But of course, it's something to be aware of, and especially with their radical ideas, especially in Germany, we should be very careful of that.
Yeah, because aren't they polling at like is it 10% or something?
Yeah. I think what's just interesting about these elections is that during the last election, so 2017, they had everybody was talking about the AFD and their main topic, which was the migration crisis. Mm-hmm. So 2015 and this big influx of migrants was just 2 years past. And so, of course, the entire debate was around that topic. And as opposed to these elections, they don't really play a major part in, yeah, let's say, the societal discourse before the elections. So what is generally expected is that they're going to stay in parliament, of course, in a minor role. But their big topic, so the migration crisis, is gone. Mm-hmm. And that is why they expect a significantly lower result in these elections on Sunday than 4 years ago.
Even though I'm surprised that they're still polling this high. So, because they're still polling at around 11-12%. I think last elections they got around 13.7%, if I'm not wrong. And therefore, I'm surprised that even without the immigrant crisis, the refugee crisis, that they still play such a relevant role. They're still going to be a big part of the opposition.
I suppose we should say that there is still an immigration and crisis, but it's different.
Seen the crisis in 2014, which Merkel handled well or not so well, depending on what way you look at it. But since that time, they've gotten big, right? Like, that was the spark of the supporters for the AfD.
I mean, of course, and also COVID is the big topic right now. I mean, there are a lot of people facing financial mm-hmm. crisis at the moment because of that. And of course, the AfD tried to put himself in the place of the opposition, of the people who are actually like...
For the small man
who is supporting...
so unique.
Who want to open up the economy, and that they're... have the opinion that the government is doing everything wrong in the COVID case, and
just very typical populist.
Yeah, it's very typical populist, but it's also not really effective at this point. I mean, of course, they gain the support, but you can see it's a made-up topic. It's not the actual topic.
All right, that was the coffee machine.
No, but I think what is also interesting about these elections is that so the elections in 2017. Everybody in the AfD, everybody in that radical party could rally behind that topic of anti-immigrant rhetoric. Yeah. Whereas during these elections with COVID, there is no general consensus on what the party's strategy towards corona measures should be. So you have quite a radical right wing part of the party who are anti-vax, who are anti-corona measures, who are generally anti-government. And then you have another part of the party that tries to present the party in a more conservative light. And I think this general lack of strategy just shows in the polls.
Yeah. And I think this is a good way to move on to Angela Merkel, of course, because she is, as I said, leaving after 16 years. And her entire, journey from being chancellor has many different stories, many different peaks. One of them, as you say, there is, I suppose, contentious debate over whether it was a success or not. But the immigration crisis in 2014, where was it 1 million refugees were?
Yeah, we're coming to the European Union.
Yeah.
And had to distribute them over the European Union.
Yeah, and then obviously as you guys said, we've seen the rise of different parties after that. But what I want to know is, what is her legacy? Is it a good one? Is it a bad one?
I think it really depends. I mean, I must be honest. She's not representing my values. She's too conservative, in my opinion, for the values I represent in my personal point of view. Mm. But I definitely would agree that she was a good leader. She definitely faced some of the severe crisis. She was also one of the few figures that was very strong on an international level, who was also very strong towards other populist governments or or leaders who were quite questionable in some points of their view, for example, Trump or etc. And I must be honest, I can really respect that. And I'm going to be curious how it's going to be with a new chancellor, because, I mean, of course, is also having such a figure throughout such a long time is definitely also creating a point of power for Germany. And we're going to have to see how it's going to work out in the future.
Yeah, I mean, 16 years after one regime, well, not one regime, but one, wrong word, one person, yeah, that's going to take many, many years for it to you know.
Especially for, our generation, I'm speaking for all of us, I guess. She's been chancellor, of Germany pretty much my whole life.
Yeah.
So we don't really know anything else, right?
Yeah.
It's pretty crazy. Yeah. And she's been a dominant figure, on the world stage for such a long time. She kept the EU stable. She kept the EU together. She was strong in the European Union. And even during the financial crisis in 2008, she tried to keep the union stable. And yeah, she's done a remarkable job, I would say, on the international stage.
I mean, I would agree. I think she definitely did a good job. But I think what kind of taints her legacy is that she didn't really govern the country. She administrated it. So there is not a single big project or a single big idea that you could pinpoint down to Merkel. She kind of just went with the societal flow. So when it became popular in Germany to not pursue nuclear energy, she abolished nuclear energy. When societal support for gay marriage was at an all-time high, she opened the path towards gay marriage. But she did not really pursue a single big project and made sure that there is a majority for that. That might be, of course, part of her success, that there was no big opposition candidate that could pinpoint any problem down to her, and that's how she stayed on for 16 years. But at the same time, now the Germany that we see now in 2021 has incredible issues as well. So we're lacking on digitalization, we're lacking on climate change, we're lacking on social aspects, military aspects. So, of course, she did administrate the country well, but there's this lack of reform during her chancellorship that is now, coming back to us.
Mm. I totally agree. She wasn't innovative at all. Definitely not. And I think this is also the issue why she's, or her party is definitely losing support in the younger generation, because many of the issues that Julius mentioned are definitely issues that are especially relevant for the younger generation, as climate change, as digitalization. How is it possible after 1.5 years of COVID that many schools are still not having a Wi-Fi connection, that we are still not having mobile data throughout the entire country?
Yeah, that's actually quite funny, or sad, however you want to look at it. The internet connection and Wi-Fi in Germany is the worst in the EU. Mm. So Lithuania, Romania have better connection than anyone traveling across Germany, which is quite a sad thing for one of the industrial leaders of the planet, of course. But I definitely think you're right that all these topics that are going to be important for this election, such as climate change, digitalization, social aspects, what is problematic for the conservatives, all these topics kind of are associated with other parties than themselves. So climate change, the Greens, digitalization, the Liberals, for example, all these social aspects and mutual respect within society is the strong point of the Social Democratic Party. So I think it kind of explains why the conservatives are polling so low at the moment, because they don't really have a narrative for the upcoming decades or the upcoming years, but what they actually want to do with the country.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I mean, you must be honest at that point. I mean, we all know it. I mean, most of you are European students or come from the European Union or have some connections to these countries. There is a high imbalance in power. I mean, Germany and France, we're definitely the strong countries, and we have a quite determinative power because of that. And this is actually criticized by many, many countries, and it's totally reasonable in my point of view. And Angela Merkel, there were a lot of attempts to reform the system and to be a bit more progressive in that point. And even on an international level, Angela Merkel wasn't as innovative as she could have been or should have been as a strong leader.
However, I still think many of us will miss her when she's gone, because it's always easy to point out the negative things about a person who was like in lead for the past 16 years. But I mean, we've seen her. She managed to lead Germany with 16 years of growth and stability. Germany is now the fourth biggest economy. So if you look at all these factors overall, if you look at the overall performance of Germany, it's still going into the right direction, right? And we don't know like what the future is going to bring, what the future candidates are going to do. Is Olaf Scholz actually going to be a continuity of Angela Merkel or not? Like all of these questions, we're just going to see in the future if the country is actually going to turn into a more progressive country, if it's going to be a continuation of.
And who replaces her on a European stage? Does that question make sense?
Yes. I see it. I mean, we definitely have to wait for the French elections also. Yes. I mean, I would say Macron at this point, but it's really unlikely how the elections are going to end.
What is maybe good to know for everybody else in the EU is that all three Chancellor candidates are decisively pro-European. It is in the nature of the Social Democrats and the Greens to be pro-European integration always. But also Laschet, the Chancellor candidate of the Conservatives, he comes from Aachen, so that's a border town.
I've actually been there.
On the French-Belgian border. And they are all favoring European integration. I think the main question is who's going to be a leader and who is respected enough on an international stage to actually implement reforms on a European level. And I think when it comes down to that, Olaf Scholz definitely has the best cards.
Yeah.
Because he is already known on the international level. He has been vice chancellor and finance minister for 4 years now. He just negotiated a new minimum tax on a global level. So he was favored he's favored by many on the international level as well because he's a known figure.
I have a question to that. Don't you think it's also really that the other members of the EU or on the international stage that the countries probably don't want to have like another strong German leader? It sounds really as we would have lived in a dictatorship, but it's not meant as that. Just from the idea that Germany had quite a lot of power and sometimes forgot to include other smaller countries in international debates, don't you think that some countries really try to prevent a similar situation?
I think you could argue for that, but at the same time we have to see that in the EU, in Brussels, nothing happens without Germany or France taking a stance on it. Yeah. Nothing happens. So this German-French axis kind of is the backbone of the EU. And if you lack German or French leadership at this level, there is not going to be any further European integration. There is not going to be any kind of reform. And we saw that just in this past year with the COVID relief fund of the EU. Everybody was talking about it, but it was only implemented once you had a consensus between Angela Merkel and Emmanuel Macron on it. And that's kind of how it works with many, many things in Brussels, right? And so even though some smaller countries, of course, want to have a bigger say in decisions, they also wouldn't favor, a weak German leader, because that, in fact, would impact all of us in the EU.
And do we think that Olaf Scholz is the best candidate for that?
No.
To me, yes.
It's not that I don't believe in him, and I really think like he's going to be a good chancellor. But I think, considering, for example, Martin Schulz Social Democratic candidate from last election, he would have been way better for that job, I think, on an international level. I mean, he was the president of the European Parliament. Of course, he's also having the connections and everything. But yeah. But I would agree from the candidates we're having, he's the best option.
I mean, go on.
But I think what is sad about these elections is that they are incredibly focused on the domestic. So the international level, so foreign policy and European policy, doesn't actually play a big part in the discussion leading up to the election or in the decision-making process of many voters. So we now had three TV debates with all three Chancellor candidates. and foreign policy wasn't a part of them. European integration wasn't a part of them. Yeah. So I think although the outcome of these elections will be very, very important for the EU as a whole, it isn't actually included in the decision-making process of many German voters.
Is that because it's just a general consensus, or?
Well, I think that the topics that are now really important to German voters are about climate change, they're about COVID, they're about the floods, they're about security issues, education. These are all issues that are domestic and that don't have much to do with foreign policy. And I think this is something, worth considering for these elections, that many of the chancellor candidates, well, because these are the important issues, focus on these issues, and so they haven't put forth very ambitious goals in terms of foreign or European policy.
Sure.
In fact, when we talked about the debates, maybe we should talk about the debates. We had three debates with all of the three candidates in them. It was pretty interesting, and it was especially a chance for Laschet, since his polls are so low, to regain popularity, since his campaign so far went pretty terrible, as we see in the polls. And we could really see how Laschet changed his rhetoric within the debates when we saw the polls dropping for him. He really had an offensive, aggressive rhetoric, especially against Olaf Scholz, now being the main rival of him in the chancellery, obviously. And he was, for example, accusing Olaf Scholz of cooperating with the left and the far left. And so far, however, this change of rhetoric did not work out for him at all. They're still trembling. And another problem for Laschet is that the election now is 5 days away, right? And many voters have already voted through postal votes. I don't know if you have, but many people already made up their mind. So, such as myself as well. So therefore, it is quite impossible for him to now try to win votes back, since many people already voted, and this could be the end of the era of the CDU within the government.
Yeah, and so the elections are on Sunday. However, there was the under 18s. Mm-hmm. When was that?
The under 18 elections. Yeah, they were.
It's mainly symbolic.
Yeah, okay. It's just symbolic, but it's just to see where the younger generation is right now. I think it's also gives us a good idea of how future politics is going to look like, and we've actually seen the Greens winning that, the popular vote.
Yeah. So is it more of an opinion poll? What age is your?
There are debates about introducing, or some parties, for example, the Social Democrats or the Greens, they're supporting that we're going to lower the election age to 16. But I mean, it's not going to happen, honestly. It's really unlikely. But it's a very good opinion poll, and also to predict future politics, probably. Because as you can see, as we already said, young people tend to vote more to the left or to the parties who are more progressive in the issues that actually matter to them, digitalization, education, climate change, as we already said.
Even though in one state in Germany, Sachsen-Anhalt, we've seen the AfD actually winning the popular vote, I believe. So it's Germany itself is actually very divided. If you look at the east, the AfD gets a lot of votes.
In rural areas or
mostly rural areas in the east,
central east.
Yeah, so it used to be the left that had the most votes there, and that were very popular there. However, this has changed since the far left used to be the party of the small men. However, the AfD kind of took that place now in the east. Right. So that's very interesting. Most people actually voting for the AfD in the east used to vote for the left.
I think it's a really important point to go to the history of our country in that term, because after reunification, of course, Germans are really happy that we're one country now, but you can still see the divide in economical, social, on all potential levels, all aspects, between the two sides, and the eastern part of Germany really feels left behind in a lot of parts. Like, they got promised a glorious future with a lot of with an economical rise and everything, and it never happened, or just really happened really slowly. Many people lost their jobs, and because of that there is a frustration towards Berlin, towards a Bundestag, towards a government, and this is kind of the consequence of that, why they tend to vote more for the extreme.
For example, there still is a wage difference between the east and the west, so
In terms of minimum wage?
Well, there's a federal minimum wage.
Just the average wage.
Yeah, and that is That is also part of the our elections on Sunday. So both the Greens, the Left, and the Social Democrats are advocating for a higher minimum wage of 12 or 13 euros per hour, depending on which party you look at. But the East is just generally lacking behind in terms of economic development in terms of average wages. And so they tend to vote more extreme in order to voice that protest against the system, let's say.
Definitely.
And before 2017, the biggest protest party, let's say, in German parliament was the Left Party. But now with the rise of the far right and the AfD, they have a new party to vote for in order to voice their opposition to the system, let's say.
And AfD are I'm sure experts in uniting them against a common enemy, you know.
Oh, for sure, they're experts in populism.
Yeah.
I would like to do a little prediction. How we're going to say
that sounds like
that
fun.
That sounds good. So my prediction is Olaf Scholz as chancellor under a traffic light coalition.
And the traffic light coalition, and then remind us again which parties would be involved.
This is the SPD, so the Social Democrats as a leading party, with the Greens on second place and the Liberals on the third position. So third coalition party.
I definitely agree. And I definitely also think that would be the best election outcome for the future of the country.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Is it the most compatible?
It's not the most compatible, but it covers all kinds of future policy aspects that are important for change in Germany, right? Mm-hmm. So you have the social aspects with the Social Democrats, climate change in the Greens, and digitalization aspects with the Liberals. And I think that would be a really good combination, although the negotiations are going to be difficult.
Yeah. I would agree with that. I think it would be a great coalition for the new government. However, we see contradicting ideals, right? So we have the Social Democrats that have promised a higher taxation of the rich, or for people who make more than 250,000 a year. They want to increase those taxes from 45% income tax to 48%, and the Free Democrats already promised that they don't want to make any more tax increases. So we see actual contradictions in their promises. So it's going to be a really hard coalition negotiations once again, and it's going to take a while. But I think they will manage.
Is that your prediction as well, Kim?
It's my prediction. Well, it's what I hope for, but it's also my prediction. Yeah.
I think it's also the most innovative, and in my opinion, that's innovation is definitely what Germany needs at this point. I mean, I'm not a fan of the Great Coalition after the time. Yeah. It was just, it was stable, but there are future challenges.
Purpose, looking at the status quo also, I think it's necessary that the Greens are finally part of the government, since so many young people talk about climate change, and since it's such an important topic, I think it's time for the Greens to be part of the government and to have some influence there.
Nice. Well, thank you very much, guys. I learned so much there, and I'm sure hopefully anybody listening as well learned a lot.